something is not right here. Be cautious.
That's some good wall. This is Core.
Support, warrior, specialist, assassin. That is the makeup of the roles in this game. And some would say, if you're playing a support hero, you have to be a good healer or get out of my game. Or that team's going to lose because they chose Tassadar, to be more specific. Can they sustain as a company, can Blizzard and the team on Heroes of the Storm sustain this game and try to keep these characters pigeonholed? Or can they branch out and create, I don't know, not necessarily hybrids, but can't a tank kind of tank and kind of self-sustain and heal and kind of do other things? Or is my jack-of-all-trades idea a terrible one? Bo Schwartz, answer me, damn it. What do you think?
I think that it's a case of the best answer we have for the time being. It can be kind of tough having those conversations when you're doing a draft and someone takes Tyrande and everyone else is pre-selected assassins and tanks, and they're all sort of scrambling to figure out, do we still need a support or not? And nobody feels like chatting except for one person in the lobby chat. So I think in order to accommodate solo play, we do need to have rules so that everyone is more quickly on the same page. And I think categories should serve that purpose. And I think a lot of people agree. And I'm all for weird and unusual characters, but I think maybe we need to, I think they need to think more about what the classification system means for that conversation.
All right.
In particular.
Before we throw it to John, how about this idea? Tassadar and Tyrande, very popular characters with the player base, whether they are competitive or otherwise. Those are two characters that people really enjoy playing. As it turns out, they're the two support heroes, with the exception of Jim, who we'll get into later, Karazim. With the exception of him, they're the two support players I want to spend time with because I'm having the most fun with. Is it possible they could take those two chuckleheads and give them their own category instead of calling them support? Call them something else. I don't know if it's just a semantics game and a waste of breath. Later, we'll talk about some stuff Blizzard said specifically about those kinds of hybrid characters and how to beef up their viability in competitive play. But I don't like going into a game and saying, Tassadar, you're my favorite character. Too bad this whole team thinks I suck because I chose you. Do you know what I'm saying? John?
I think it's really an interesting case where we do need them to do something to tell the player base that, hey, it's okay that not every support in this game is a full healer. And to get that perception across, because obviously we haven't seen this kind of pushback on characters with the warriors like we have, where everybody says, oh, Sonya is a really good second warrior. Mm-hmm. And same with Arthas. He's kind of, and they've kind of developed the term bruiser has been a term that gets thrown around a lot for these characters, where they're a little meatier, but they do a little bit more damage. But you don't see the same level of pushback there that you do with a Tassadar and Tyrande, because there is this perception that support needs to heal, and that needs to be what you do. And if you're not doing that, then you either need a support that can do that and go with two support, and that's the way you need to go. And I think the changes that need to be made is either more categories to better explain what their role is, or fundamental shifts in the game to get players used to that idea and how they play to make them more viable. Because I don't think every support in the game should just be a pure healer. That doesn't sound fun for future supports.
Yeah, it doesn't to me either. And there's this problem of Blizzard is married and has been for a very long time, and certainly in WoW, to the holy trinity of, tank, healer, DPS. In a lot of ways, this is kind of hugging that same tree, for lack of a better way to explain it. And I don't want them to get so mired in that they're not willing to go somewhere else. What if reclassification was ordered? What if it was Rangers was a class. That just meant something that did ranged damage and or heals and or whatever. They were a ranged character. And everything they do is relatively speaking at range. And it doesn't work for everybody because, you know, you got guys like Rexxar, who's technically a warrior, but really it's his bear who's the warrior, and he's a ranged DPSer in a lot of ways. I don't know how they do it. I just want to put it out there that there are times it feels limiting, and when it comes to support, it feels like the redheaded stepchild of the game a little bit. It's like, well, I guess someone will have to play a healer who wants to do it. And Bo, you've said multiple times, your first choice is not healer. You'd rather go assassin.
Yeah. Well, I mean, here's the elephant in the room is that there's the Blizzard paradigm, but there's also the expectations created by other MOBAs that people are coming over and bringing into heroes. And certainly in those games, the companies come up with classifications like marksman and mage and fighter and tank. But really, you see the classifications that the community makes are based on their lanes. You got your top lane, you got your mid lane, your jungler, your ad carry and support who duo in the bottom lane. And so that game has evolved so that everyone going into a MOBA game on the traditional map says, hey, I'm playing this role and I'm picking a champ that's widely accepted as good for this lane. The thing that makes Heroes a brilliant game is that they've got a bunch of maps and they throw all these expectations out the window. So it's kind of a good problem to have to say, well, this is Infernal Shrines and, you know, Hammer's decent on this map and Sonya's decent on this map. And we can do this weird thing where we don't have a tank and a healer and we can make a strange composition that's going to win. And if you've ever felt that when you've played your Heroes games, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You've got Tyrande and Abathur and Tassadar on a team and somehow you won. And you're like, it's amazing. How did we win?
Yeah.
So I think it's good that it shakes things up that way. I just think it's very challenging when you're talking about everyone on the team has to have that conversation. It's like, oh, we have expectations about how this is supposed to go, and they're being usurped. So we have to deal with it by having a conversation, which is hard in a twitchy game, and maybe you don't feel like typing so much.
Yeah,
so,
and you made a good point about other MOBAs bringing players over who may want to try this out. They come with a set of expectations built around those other games, and like it or not, as much, you know, Blizzard can call this a brawler all day, but it's a MOBA. It's what people will see. They see that there are lanes to it, no matter what map they're on. They'll see that there are these towers, you know, trying to keep you out of these gates. They got these little minions running around, creeps, if you want to call them that. It's the damn MOBA. I mean, we can call it a brawler if we want. And yes, games play out very differently. These roles can be very different. Your experience in that game can be very different than what you just left in, say, a League game or a Dota 2 game. But nonetheless, the expectations are still there, and they have to be addressed. Perception is everything. Who said that famously one time? Somebody did. Some famous guy said, perception is everything. And if he didn't, then I said it.
Was it Houdini before he disappeared?
I don't know, dude.
I don't know either.
Didn't he die doing that? Didn't Houdini die trying to hide or disappear or something? Is that how it went down?
Trying to hide. I don't know. He ducked behind some bushes and got eaten by a bear.
Something like that. All right, everybody, listen. You're listening to Core. This is the first episode of Core. And I'm Scott Johnson, Bo Schwartz over there, and John Jagger over there. Guys, it's good to be here doing our first episode ever. And these are the kind of issues we're going to talk about on the show, along with news and other coverage. And we won't do this every week where we sort of explain our plans, but we have other cool things in mind. Will we talk about what patches are coming and what affects you? Absolutely. New heroes coming, what they do, how they sound, how they look, what happened on the PTR? Absolutely. All these things are true. We'll talk about the professional scene, who's winning what, who's going to BlizzCon, who's not. All that's true, but we are also going to start putting together some, we've called them curated pieces, but basically it's like a little journalistic behind the scenes stuff. Talk to a dev, talk to some player bases, talk to a famous team, get somebody from Cloud9 on. Stuff like that, but do them as separate sort of crafted, put together, edited pieces that we'll include with episodes. We not only want to do that on the regular, but do it with a level of quality that you're probably not used to from podcasts generally. And we're up to the challenge and we're pretty excited about it. So thank you all for being here for episode one. We really appreciate it. Speaking of championships, holy shite. Last week, I guess last weekend, this weekend, right? It was a week ago today.
Yeah.
Last weekend.
It was the America's Championships. There were no Canadians in this final thing, Bo. How do you feel about that?
Yeah. I'm fine with it. I mean, it's just so crazy even to have an America's championship. I mean, a lot of the esports stuff I watch is dominated by Koreans and Chinese and, you know, European teams that the Americans are often the... It's funny, in esports, the Americans are often underdogs in these events. So
Cloud9 took the whole schmear. There was really good competition happening. Convinced me more than ever that Heroes has what it takes to be a really fun spectator sport. I think the length of the games and how many games you can get in during any given tournament is pretty awesome. And I was pretty riveted that whole weekend. I was into that as I've ever been to anything ever. And thought it was rad. So this moves the American team on, but we still got European championships coming. And I guess the Asian stuff still happening before BlizzCon. And then all of them come to BlizzCon and then the Americans lose then, right? Isn't that how that'll work?
It'll be interesting. You know, we've certainly seen the American teams get trounced, you know, our best teams lose, but you know, they're paying attention. They know what their weaknesses are. I like to think we have a fighting chance.
Yeah,
Cloud. It's a new game. It's a new environment. So they're different. I think Heroes rewards different types of play and tactics. So we'll see. I think all bets are off in terms of assuming that any one country has the best Heroes players. I think that's what we're going to find out very shortly.
Yeah, and despite the fact that there's plenty of other competition going on in Hearthstone, StarCraft, and even some WoW stuff at BlizzCon, I'm most excited to be in the crowd at the Heroes playoffs and championship games. I think that's going to be really, really great. One of the things
are you going to get some sticks? Because, you know, the thing now is to have sticks.
They give them out now. Together. Like last year, they gave them out for us. We had two of those. You had to blow them up yourself, but they gave you two of those things. And then you just kind of whack them together. You're talking about the little blow-up sticks, right?
Yeah. So like while you're watching the broadcast, you hear all the sticks banging.
Yeah.
It feels new. I don't know. It's not a new technology by any stretch.
I feel like it's a thing the NBA here has all the time. I keep saying here because I know you're in Canada. I know that's stupid because I think we have.
What is NBA? We've got like the Raptors and some Vancouver
right.
team.
I'm not thinking at all. I've got to quit treating you guys like the way South Park does, where you're like aliens or whatever. But here for a lot of those games, everybody's got that stuff behind the basket. And so I think that's, we're seeing esports literally put on the clothes of traditional sports coverage / you know, commentary, like all that stuff just reeks of the way we've done it for baseball, football, basketball for ages and ages. And that's just one more thing. Get the crowd involved, make a bunch of sound. I don't actually know what, I mean, in the basketball game, let's say the Suns are playing the Jazz, John. All right.
Okay.
Let's pit us against each other here.
Yes.
If I'm behind the basket and I got a bunch of those sticks, wham, 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 wham. I'm doing that to screw up your free throw guy. It's supposed to distract. That's the entire point of it. It's not to get everyone excited. It's to freak you out. In esports, I don't think they're using them that way. I think it's just like, yay!
Yeah, it's just like, hey, let's make a bunch of noise. It's like, what was the thing that they played? What was it, the Vuvuzela or whatever it was? Where you just heard that the entire match?
Yeah. What was that
like
called?
One of those.
The Vuvuzela.
That's,
no.
That's what it is.
The Iggy Azalea. Azalea. Is that it?
Yeah. Okay. That sounds like
everyone
it.
Everyone got handed a wrapper, a white wrapper from Australia as they walked in, and life went on.
Just blow on this and have a good time.
I'm really, really pumped though for those finals, and I don't know. There's something about I've watched a lot of stuff from Dota 2 and League of Legends as well, just to sort of have, you know, I mean that's all there was before this, and since glomming onto Heroes, I think I'm coming away feeling more excited about it because there's more happening quicker. Like, and there's more crazy plays happening right up front. You got teams fighting it out sooner, level two, level three, creating, you know, shifts in momentum long before they ever seem to happen in a league game. But would you find that, is that true? Is that a perception bias thing where because I love this game right now, that's just all I'm noticing? Or is that true across the board?
There really isn't much of a laning phase in Heroes. And so they do get to the action a lot quicker. I would say that, like, you know, other MOBAs do have their tense moments of 1v1s, 2v2 sort of skirmishes that happen in the early game that I find, you know, we still need some maps that promote the smaller skirmishes. I find a lot of what we saw this weekend were full-on 5v5 fights for the most part, with teams roaming around in full gank squads. And so, you know, both are good, but I would say there's less of those minor skirmishes in the heroes matches.
Yeah.
Usually two people get into a fight and everyone else rushes to help and it turns into a 5v5. So,
yeah.
But I will say that this last weekend's production was a real step up from all the heroes productions I've watched as far as someone who watches more than just the heroes broadcast. Yeah. I think they did a phenomenal job of making it, of like stepping up their game and making it a really exciting event to watch.
Would you argue that part of that, I mean, the presentation changed because the entire UI of the casters changed. And what I didn't know, I just figured this was Blizzard, you know, hustling around going, all right, well, our Heroes of the Dorm stuff, that was okay. But really, we sort of half-assed that a little bit on a technical side. So we need to improve that whole, you know, Madden interface, for lack of a better way of putting it. And along comes this, and I went, oh, wow, look at this. They got like overlay photos popping in. They got in-game UI that we certainly don't have access to during the game or during, you know, during observation matches. And it turns out they crowdsourced that, sort of.
Yeah, it's a guy, Ollie, who makes, I don't know what his relationship is. He's some guy from Germany on Twitter,
yeah,
who I guess makes this stuff, or he's been working with them to make improvements, but I don't think he's an actual Blizzard employee. He's like a community member, from what I understand.
They reached out to him after his stuff starts showing up on community run matches and plays. In fact, I want to say Kyle, who called a lot of our Heroes of the Pants shows, had an earlier version of his UI.
Yeah,
which is really cool. It does a lot of different things, tells you different information, and, you know, seemed pretty pro to me. So to hear that they, in a way, I mean, I don't know what this is about. The game's still pretty new. They're still hustling heroes out to market. They just came out of beta at the end of last year, early this year. When was that, actually? How long's that been? Is that like February, March?
Yeah, I think it was early this year.
Oh, crap.
January when I was able to buy in.
Okay, so I feel like I'm crunching time, because I've played nothing but this game since beta, or I guess late beta. And it feels like one giant launch to me. But anyway, it sounds like it probably had one of those moments where they're like, all right, team, we got to build a better observer mode for all these broadcasts and stuff. And then somebody went, excuse me, but this kid has made this amazing thing in Germany. We probably could just work with him and make it happen. And they did. I have a prediction. That kid will end up working at Blizzard. And I call him a kid. I don't know how old he is. He could be 50. I don't know what he is. But yeah, it's pretty cool, though. Getting your UI all notable like that. That's pretty rad.
Yeah, it looked really sleek, and it made for better matches, because, you know, like you said, the Heroes of the Dorm, as fun as that was, it definitely had some UI problems.
Yeah, and it does still in the game. Like, what I want them to do is integrate some of those ideas into observer mode for just lay people like us to fiddle with, especially as we head into more potential community tournament play down the road. We would like more of that, please. Let's talk about Las Vegas. Viva Las Vegas. That's such a town, it'll make you frown. I don't know any of the quotes. Are there other mottos?
What stays in Vegas
happens here. No, what happened in there
Vegas
goes up your
Vegas.
Butt. Oh, what went up your butt stays in Vegas. Is that
all
it?
Of these slogans are true.
I actually think they'd look great on a sign. So anyway, Vegas happened. That's where these playoffs were held, these America's Championships. And during that, there was some stuff that leaked out, not leaked out, but some interviews with devs and a few things that came out about the game that were kind of interesting. And we've gone, and primarily Bo has gone and inserted a lot of the new upcoming patch notes that we're aware of for the PTR into what we learned to give it a little bit of context. But let's just dig into it, because there's a bunch and it's all kind of interesting. One of the first outcries I heard from players I play with when Rexxar was released was, where are all the traps? Where are all the other stereotyped hunter, World of Warcraft hunter stereotypes? Because you got a few in there. He can feign death. He can fire off that flare and reveal an area and catch stealthies. He can do the pet thing. Like, there's lots of hunter in Rexxar the Hunter. He is Lord of Hunters. He's the greatest hunter of all time. And he never hunts alone. Right?
Yeah.
That's right.
But all those abilities feel like they're buttons from World of Warcraft.
They really do. But you don't have traps. And some have said, well, why no traps? Let me choose one of my skills to be, you know, between a freezing, a fire, or whatever trap. They cause slows, or they cause stuns, or they whatever, or they're just damaging. It does seem like a thing that, if I was to guess, was probably on the table when designing that character and just got taken out for simplicity. But they said if they want to do this sort of things, or this sort of stuff, they still kind of have the option to give it to other characters. But if you go ahead and just give Rexxar every possible hunter trait, you're kind of, aren't you kind of giving away potential new hero traits that you could have used, you know?
The conversation came up a little bit because when Misha dies, you have two buttons that you can't use, or, well, I guess you can't even use your trait.
Yeah.
But two of the buttons of your basic abilities are grayed out, and what I saw was, why not put traps in there? If you, like, lose Misha, then you can trap people and kite away.
Oh, I see. I like a getaway.
Yeah.
I can see that. An escape route option for, like, a freezing trap or something could have potential. But also, that seems a little cheap because he gets away pretty easy as it is, I think. Like, if she dies, which is bad because nobody should be focused on the bear anyway, but if you're not focused on Rexxar and Rexxar poops the bed, or the bear does, rather.
God, bear poop.
Bear poop in your bed.
You don't want that.
If that happens, then you just run. It's not hard. I've yet to see anybody with Rexxar who wasn't completely dumb, who didn't just turn around and go the other way until their bear spawned again.
Yeah, I don't think he needs an amazing escape, and that seems to be what a lot of the talk is about, is, but Rexxar doesn't have an escape. Well, he kind of does. He has an escape in the form that he has a whole nother creature in there, getting in the way of your abilities, taking hits instead of you if you line of sight, you know, skill shots, and things like that. And if trouble starts to happen, Misha can be in there doing damage, being in the way, blocking people, and Rexxar can just kind of run away.
Yeah, anytime,
really.
It's not
a great escape, but, you know, it's, I would say, on par with other heroes that don't have the best escapes in the whole wide world.
Sure, I would argue it's as good an escape as anything they've given Leoric, or I'm trying to think of another one. I mean,
well,
I guess
Leoric's got that cool little...
Oh, his little fade out and teleport
Wraith thing. But
yeah, that's cool, I guess, but the chances of him dying there are as likely as somebody catching up real quick to Rexxar, I think. I mean, I don't know. When I played Leoric, which wasn't too long to give a real educated opinion, my feeling was he had no way to get out of anything bad. He just felt like he was stuck there. And I know part of that is mitigated by him not having to spawn back at Nexus, but he can just sort of hang around there and piss people off. So that's, you know, that's kind of the trade-off. But as tanks go... I mean, who else? Mardin, what? He hops out with his dwarf toss. Who else can get out quick? Well, I mean, freaking Diablo.
I mean, a lot of the tanks, Joanna can get out. Sonya of Spectrite can escape with their spear.
Yeah.
How
about Chen? He just drinks.
Nubarak.
Nubarak can get away. Chen just sits there and drinks. That's it.
Chen just sits there and drinks. And
he's a hero.
You need to help him. Although he can turn into a barrel and roll away if he really has to.
That's a good point. There's cooldown on that, though. But
I mean, it's all varied. And like you said, Sonya has to spec into it to even be able to do it. Otherwise, she can just spin and hope that her healing from spinning is enough to mitigate any damage she's still getting. Like, that. Some are going to have really great escapes. Some aren't. They can't all be Tassadar, you know, who is... really tough to kill if he's really trying hard.
Well, the devs say that they are okay with player feedback thus far that says Rexxar is too weak without Misha. They think that the player should care if she dies, and they are meant to protect one another. So in other words, one is no good without the other. Of course, if Rexxar goes down, you're both down. But
I love this. I love that the theme of the character is that relationship. Like, that's the main reason why Rexxar is enjoyable. Is mm-hmm. Rexxar, when you give commands to Misha, Misha's like having a little Pokemon pet in Heroes that you give commands to. So I like that.
Yeah.
I want them to keep that.
I agree. I think some of the control stuff there needs some refining, and there's they've said as much. But regardless of that, it's cool that they put that in there and that it's not just your... I mean, he may as well be Thrall or freaking, you know, Rhaegar or somebody else. Maybe just some other orc. Without these abilities and stuff. So this desire on the player basis, and I don't know who's being so vocal about it, but if some of the player base who bought Misha and are playing him, or Misha bought Rexxar and are playing him, are saying that he's not strong enough individually without the bear, I think they're missing the point. Why? They're not going to just give you two equally powered warriors and say, here you go, split push the lanes.
Well, I don't think it's completely without merit. I've played my fair share of Rexxar games. It does feel like you're out of the match. Like, it's, you have Misha has a reduced death timer, so you're not out of the match that long, but it still sucks to feel like you're on break for 20 seconds because you only have a slow that you can apply. But getting into the fray as just Rexxar, basically the enemy team's going to be licking their chops, and if they're like a dive comp, they're going to go right after you and kill you because you're undefended. So I don't think it's without merit to say, like, that you'd like to have something a little more than you can do besides one ability while she's dead. But yes, there should be a penalty for Misha dying. So
that's a good point. I hadn't thought about the whole while you're dead, you maybe should, it maybe shouldn't be so punishing.
To me, though, it's on par with, you know, killing Murky's egg. You know, part of the advantage of Murky is that he is super weak. But if you kill that egg, he has a longer respawn time. And if your egg's down, all of a sudden, Murky players can't be as aggressive. They have to be a little more careful. They're revealed on the map so they can be picked off easily. Mm-hmm. You kind of go through this little bit of time before you can, you know, lay another egg and feel effective. It's, you know, that's the penalty for losing one half of what makes up your character.
So, yeah. so maybe what Rexar needs is to pull out his phone and play Peggle for 24 seconds.
Perfect.
Hey.
And then when Misha comes back, then, you know, put it away.
Listen, when they had that in WoW and you could do your flight routes and have
that's what I was thinking,
Bejeweled in that up. Oh man, that would be amazing for the longer timeouts on this thing.
Or Hearthstone. Why am I thinking of Peggle? They have their own casual IPs now.
Yeah, that's
you
true.
Can't play a game in 24 seconds.
Well, you could play. You could take moves in a longer kind of AI game or something. Like that would be really. That's actually not a terrible idea. I mean, it'd probably piss whatever. Players are already mad enough that their teammates aren't paying enough attention to what's happening in quick matches, but.
You know what? At the rate they're releasing heroes, there are so many heroes. If Rexar is not for you, you've got a lot of other choices.
That's a really good point. All right, I got an idea. How about this? Rexar Misha solution number one from Scott. Write this down, everyone. Bronze this and remember it. Never forget. All right, here's how it goes. Level 16. You choose a skill that lets you, from all your choices, that lets Rexar and Misha change places. Misha can stand on two legs and Rexar gets down on all fours and has to go out and take all the heat. How about that? What do you think of that? That'd be all right.
Yeah. It's a game changer right there.
not always good ways. They're constantly monitoring heroes that are always picked. They are talking like Kel'Thas, Leoric as examples. I remember when Leoric came out and everybody was a little bit poo-poo on him. And now he's picked for everything. He's in every major match you watch. And obviously we were wrong. He's fine.
Well, no, actually, we were right. He wasn't fine.
Well, I thought he was under
P. Coming, yeah. He's getting nerfed a bit.
I thought he was UP. Many think, or I thought he was just kind of crappy when I first played him. Just not a great tank. And now he's OP for sure. Because,
well, he's not, like, his kit is not very, he doesn't really have a stun. A lot of the brilliant tanks have stuns and crowd control abilities. Joanna can interrupt alts. You know, ETC's got his big ultimate as well. But then you have Murden who can stun, and you have Anubarak who can stun. Like, these are all, the point of being the tank is controlling, dictating the terms of the fight. That's what you're trying to do in your tank. And Leoric kind of doesn't do that. Leoric, you know, is a dive champion, and he gets in and he does a lot of damage. And I think it's more the fact that he does a lot of damage and has a high health pool, and it's just irritating that you see him in these dual comps. Like, oftentimes the dream is Leoric and Joanna on the same team, and then some ranged behind you.
Yeah.
And and what he's getting nerfed is, it's his wave clear that's getting nerfed. I mean, the other thing is that he can just tackle so many problems with his versatility that it makes him good on a team, but I don't know. I'd rather play Joanna or play Murden than Leoric, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't dislike Leoric. I just, and as a character in the game, like, just purely from a, hey, who do they pull from Diablo and put in here? I love that he's in there.
Yeah.
I think he's awesome in that way, but he's just not my, I guess he's just not my playstyle.
Well, I will be the dissenter and say Leoric is fantastic.
You really like Leoric.
I do. Yeah. I mean, I like Johanna better. She's probably my favorite hero in the game. But I got my master skin. I got to do something else with my warrior right now.
That's a good point.
And Leoric is my second choice, and he is. And his wave clear is a big part of that, because it feels very cool to have this whole wave of minions coming at you. You press one button and you've killed half of them, and the others are a slight nudge away from death.
Yeah, that is kind of nice. A tank with good minion control is rare, so that's pretty good. Johanna has that as well, but in a more sustained way, or I guess not a sustained way, a slower way of doing that. What's that thing called where she farts and brings everybody into her? What's that called?
Condemn.
Yeah,
condemnation.
Condemnation fart. Exactly. In the game, whenever anyone has that sort of thing, like the monk has his little double fart heal. It's just all I can think about is that these characters are farting.
Yeah,
can't help.
That's how fighting works.
It's exactly how it works. So they don't want to do bans yet, which is something I think we would be okay with. By banning, meaning characters, you know, teams making decisions before the match to say, you know, in draft mode or something, we don't want anyone to be able to play Leoric, or the other team says, well, we don't want anybody on whoever. They don't want to do that, or at least they don't want to do it right now, but they are looking at implementing something in the future. They say this, quote, it is not ideal that third-party sites are handling bans for tournaments. So they would rather have that happening under the hood in their own garden than someplace else.
This is a symptom of, I think, baggage from other MOBAs. Bans are alive and well in most other competitive MOBA formats, so mm-hmm. people just expect it here.
Yeah.
I think it makes sense that they don't have it because the game is new and the hero pool is low.
Yeah.
But once they get up to 100 heroes and they release hero 101, it might have some broken combination with some other hero that they didn't see. It gets their complexities exponentially, the testing that they have to do to make sure everything's balanced gets exponentially harder with each new hero. So the ban system is actually a great way for the community to provide real-time reporting to Blizzard to say, this hero gets banned all the time because it's broken.
Yeah.
So eventually they're going to have to do it, I think.
Have you guys ever played a match where you did a custom match and had the exact mirror of every character on both sides? Has anyone ever done that?
I've been pretty close before. I think even in our tournament that we did, I think we had some where it was very close to one-to-one.
Yeah. I always wonder about that, though. I mean, Bo, you make a good point. 100 heroes, oh my gosh. I mean, I can't even think of the balancing problems that come from that. And right. I don't know how they handle it. I guess the only way you handle it is a ban. But what, what if you've got stuff you can't? How many bans are you going to allow? How does it work in the other MOBAs? Do they say, well, these 12 characters are banned for this tournament?
Well, I'm more versed in League than any other one, League of Legends, and that's three bans for each side before the picking starts.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Right. So a total of six heroes will get banned. So, that's a competitive format. You know, if you just play the quick match format and you're just fine with that, then that's okay. But even now, I'd say quick match is kind of rough. Like, you talk about the mirror matches. Well, sometimes you play games where everyone has, there's a Kael'thas on both sides, there's a Zeratul on both sides, there's a Nova on both sides, and it's the most frustrating match to play because you decide to play, I don't know, Muradin, and you can't kill anything, and no one's doing what you want them to do, and you're the only visible person getting shot.
Yeah, you know? it basically turns a game of rock, paper, scissors into a game of rock or just paper, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you just have these matches where, well, both your lane clearers are Zagara, and they're both hucking little balls of death at each other for 2 hours. It's not fun, or as fun.
It can go bad, but I had a game the other day that was, if you had looked at who we drafted and who we got, or not drafted, because it wasn't drafted, it was just quick match, but, you know, we had, I think, three support, one assassin, and one specialist.
Yeah.
Was what we got on quick match versus a team that was much more traditional in its comp. They had a warrior, two specialist was about as weird as they got on their side. But I got in, and I even, just to try and make sure everybody was being cool, I just said, hey, look, we got a really weird comp. Let's just have fun.
Yeah.
And that's what I said right out of the gate. That's what we decided we were going to do. Not only did we win, but it was one of the most interestingly fun matches I've played in a long time because of how we had to adapt to try and play that way.
Yeah, and we've all been part of a game or two, something similar to that, where we went in thinking, well, don't know about this, and then end up either pulling it out or having a very close game or having some very amazing moments happen, some kind of weird Abathur combo we'd never thought of or whatever, and those have been some of my favorite moments in this game, so... So on the one hand, I hope they don't just go down the path of like, well, we got to give every old MOBA feature to these guys because that's what they come expecting if we want to get that player base. And I know they want that player base or whoever's not satisfied with those other games to look at this as an alternative. So I know that's important to them, but I hope what's more important to them is this kind of variety is why I think I'm drawn to the game. It's map variety, it's character variety, strategy variety, and knowing I can do all of it in 20 minutes or less. It's kind of the perfect mix for me.
Yeah.
So let's hope they keep that up.
So, and yeah, so I think this ban system is specifically to address like the really broken stuff. And I don't think they do that in your casual matches. I think they just do that for the people who want to prove themselves in the ranked ladder.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's where they implement it. Like, I don't see bans, at least not anytime soon, coming to quick match, but you could see it falling in ranked play very, you know, sooner than later.
Well, the three of us have talked offline and also in game about draft mode in quick match, though? Do you think that's a more likely scenario that we would see? Like, what is more likely? We'll see bans in competitive play before we, or will we see before that some kind of draft mode for quick play, like a quick play version 2, or even an alternate play mode that is just basically quick play with draft?
I don't know, because from my vantage point as an ignorant consumer, I'm just like, it's easy. Just make new modes, guys. Like, just do it.
Right.
Like, you have the technology to do draft. Just do draft and don't add any numbers to my ranked thing. You're done.
Yeah.
So I think that is probably pretty easy to implement. And they could do it any day. I think bans are probably not hard either. They get their UI guys to do that up front. It doesn't affect the actual in-game stuff. You know, and I think we want other stuff. I see there's a lot of people on the Heroes Reddit that want their what's called ARAM, which is just like a random hero. Like, everyone gets a random hero. You just get tossed into a map and you go.
Wow.
Some people like that too. And I know I would probably enjoy doing that every now and then, except I just always get the one I never wanted. So
You have to heal Gorath. You got to, like, heal his whole
Malfurion
match.
Malfurion again.
Oh, shit. Sorry, John. What?
I think the fear at this point, though, is, you know, how many times can you split the current player base across different modes before you start to get into a really adverse queue situation?
Fragmentation.
And so I'm kind of copying off something that Blizzard did talk about doing for my answer, which is I would expect that we're going to get a unranked draft mode, essentially, where it's not competing for any sort of level or anything like that. It's not part of ranked play, but you do have the option to draft, and it's just an alternative, and it's just one new thing to kind of fragment the player base a little bit. And it kind of makes sense in the latter, right? You know, you go from playing against AI to playing quick matches, then you'd go into unranked draft to kind of learn that, and then you'd finally move up to ranked mode.
Sure. Yeah, you're right about it fragmenting, though, which adds some complexity to how matchmaking works and making sure that doesn't get too disrupted and still, you know, there's still plenty of people to play with no matter what mode you're in at the time. What would be interesting, and I know that they've shied away from this idea, but a voting system for not only maps, like a lot of people have asked for that. In the FPS world, you would vote for what map you want to play next. And in this game, which is a lot like that, where we've got multiple maps, it is all random and you don't have a choice when it comes to quick match or, for that matter, ranked. Some have suggested we'll put in a thing where everybody gets to kind of choose. I understand their misgivings about that because they don't want to, you know, they don't want to have teams that create entire strategies strictly around the voted for map, and then that's all they ever want to pick because they don't really care about the variety. They just want to win. So I get their thinking there, but voting as to whether or not this match is draft or not might be something that would work without fragmenting the base. So if you got into that game and you were just expecting to play, oh, good, these guys all want to do draft mode. Sweet, I'll vote for that too. Or if it gets voted down, well, I came in for a quick match, so I'll just play whatever they're going to play. Do you see what I mean? That maybe is a place better suited for a vote versus, say, map voting, which begins to ostracize maps that don't favor players.
Yeah, I think if they did map voting, you know, doing kind of going back to what first-person shooters do, it's not voting from the full pool of maps. It's, hey, you were randomly selected an option between these two or three. Which of these two or three would you rather play on?
Yeah. No, that makes sense. What do you think, Bo? You think that's a bad idea? Voting for which, like, if you could just choose, I want this to be draft mode quick match or I don't. And it was, and it went 3-2. I guess we're going draft mode.
I think, you know, I haven't had a particular flavor, like a want to play a specific map. I know sometimes I'm so tired of Garden of Terror. That's just, it's just a personal thing. I just feel like that map. And then there's some changes coming to it that might actually address why I don't like that map. I just feel like that map really drags on. Yeah.
Do you like that they changed it from spread my seed to spread my spores? Do you like that?
No, better? I like memes. We need things to celebrate. Like, they shouldn't, you know, they got rid of the cigar and now they're getting rid of spreading seeds, even though spreading your seeds is perfectly acceptable English. That means nothing bad. It's just pervs who make innocuous sexual innuendo.
Sure. Really, and if you think about it, if you say it without smirking, it's just good old-fashioned reproduction talk, you know?
Yeah, and yeah, it's exactly it. It's not even like it's terrible humor. Well, I mean, it's terrible humor, but it's not inappropriate. It's not really inappropriate. Anyway, whatever. Yeah,
what if they changed it to sow my oats?
Sow my oats!
So map voting. yeah, sow my oats. I think if they had like a Quaker oatmeal map, then that would make
I'm
sense.
I'm in on that. That'll look like Barbara Bush because I know my Quaker oats. Anyway. Sorry, you were saying voting maps or voting for drafts.
What do you like? I think I don't. It's not a problem that I feel needs to be addressed right now. I think there's so few maps for me personally that I'm not like, man, I really not never getting this map. I think I just want more modes. And there's a custom mode if I really want to play a map. I mean, you can explore the map by yourself or with friends. So.
Sure. There's ways around all of that. All right, so they say they're always working on matchmaking improvements, which, you know, that seems like a thing they'd say. They are saying, if needed, characters like Taronda and Tassadar will be changed to make room for variety. It's an interesting thing to say. I don't know what that means. What do you think that means?
Well, we know kind of what that ultimately meant. They're making them more supporty.
Oh, I see. Because in the patch notes stuff, there are indications of that, as well as them just saying, you know, they need to be more supportive. But what does that mean? Because right now, Tassadar is one of my favorite things ever. He's comfort food in that game for me.
So what it ultimately equates to is, to anybody listening, I read the patch notes, but have not had time to reflect or meditate on the patch notes. For Tassadar, it means that he is going to be able to shield easier and more often. And if you select the talent for it, your allies will get more health back from being shielded. So kind of this weird passive shield heal thing that he'll be able to do. Mm-hmm. In the case of, and there's more changes for him than that. Taranda's was a little bit, you know, more basic. They took Shadow Stalk, they removed its ability to identify where the enemies are. Mm. And now while your allies are affected by Shadow Stalk, they're healed. So, they're throwing in some, they basically gave her a healing ultimate, and they made some changes to Tassadar to give him the ability to get people life back as opposed to just shield them.
Well, I remember the first time I played Tassadar, I actually thought that what was happening when I shielded people was they were getting a certain shield amount. So you'd look at the UI's changed now, but we'd look at their life bar and you would have, I think it was green at the time, it's white now, but you'd have their life and then you'd have this additional bar that showed how much shield was there. And as the shield would count down and dissipate, I thought what was happening is they would get the bonus life back that the shield represented. It sounds like that's what they're going to do. Yeah, yeah. So that's what they're going to do is what you're telling me, especially if you spec that way.
No, I think they're increased. There's a trait that when you shield someone, they heal with their basic attacks, heal them. So that's getting buffed. Like they'll heal for more.
Oh, okay.
And the shield amounts on heroes will be 50% stronger. And just the overall shield amount is getting buffed up. So he's still going to be the Tassadar you know. It's just they're focusing on increasing those talent selections that make you a support and not a damage dealer.
Okay, I like that. Because even when I go full damage with him, I'm still not competing with other good players who are you know, better damage dealers than I am.
And they said they're not going to be... These are not going to be characters that are as healy as... You know, the more typical picks for true supports like, you know, Uther, Malfurion and stuff like that. But they said they feel like that with these changes and the utility that they also bring, that it puts them on par with those characters. So they may not be your best healers, but you're getting better healing with a ton of utility as opposed to really bad healing and pure utility.
Yeah, you're getting the best blue wall ever made is what you're
getting. That's
right. Both those characters got very good representation in the tournament that we watched, the America's Championships. It's not like they were like, man, relegated to the sideline because they're Tassadar and Taronda. They were picked because they were Tassadar and Taronda.
Right.
And if anything, it just sort of confirms that they are support, and support doesn't just mean healing. They bring the utility that the teams were looking for. So I can see, you know, if they had as much healing as the more healing identity-centered characters do and had their utility, they would just be auto-picks. You would never pick the other four.
Yeah.
That's, I think, what would happen to anyone who's trying to win games.
I could see that. They say they have no plans to tweak heroes to choose their own trait at the beginning of the match the way Karazim does. Or Karazim, excuse me.
Jim,
sorry. We're calling him Jim from now on, by the way. Jim from Utah. They think that's what makes him unique, and I would agree. He also is... So he gives me hope, and I'll tell you why. And specific to this Tassadar Taranda Jim from Utah question, which is these kind of hybrid-y kind of things that feel like they're more focused on you can choose kind of what you want to do, and it's less like, well, if you're Rhaegar, you're just going to heal, you bastard. I mean, that's all you're going to do is heal, really. You're not really good at anything else. You can do kind of a DPS build, but not really. So you're going to heal. Hey, Lili, guess what you're going to do? You're going to freaking heal, all right? Malfurion, you're not going to siege. You're going to heal. Well, what they've done with these guys is say, well, you can do other things. You can harass. You can shield. You can cause mayhem. You can create area of effect stuff that really complements stuff if you have a Kel'Thas or a freaking Jaina on your team. You can do all kinds of weird things. So what I like about Jim, it's going to take me a while to get used to this, is that he is truly the thing, I hope, the future of support, because he can be genuine, straight up top support guy, healer guy on the charts. I have with him out healed other traditional healers in the game. On games that I've even lost, we had more healing than their Malfurion or somebody had. So you can spec him to be healer Joe McGillicuddy. You can also spec him to be a really nice hybrid with good mana regen, good healing, decent upgrades on DPS, kind of a really good jack of all trades, or you can go all DPS if somebody else is healing on your team. My point is, if that's the future of support, I am in, dude. Like, give me the versatility over just, well, this guy can dump a lot of healing, you know?
Yeah, and I think he does bring some utility. What I've seen him be used for is in dive comps. I mean, he's there. I've played a game as a Jaina, I think, a few days ago, and you know, the fight seemed to be centered away from me, which is what I want as Jaina. I go in and I shoot all my ice stuff, but then their darn Jim kept radiant dashing me and beating me up and chasing me out. And it was really irritating.
Yeah.
And they ended up winning that game because I was having a really hard time getting into the fight because of that Karazim, who was also built healing and palming people and saving them from death. That's also super irritating.
Yeah.
A really good Jim is a nightmare to deal with.
He's really fun. Favorite hero right now is really good.
I really like him, but I will say this. I don't feel, and this is just me personally, I don't feel like the choice of trait at the beginning is much of a choice at all with him.
Interesting. See, I feel the opposite, but only because, all right, so I always feel mana starved in this game. Doesn't matter what I'm doing or who I'm playing. I feel like I don't have enough mana ever. And I know that's kind of the point. They want you to think about how much you're expending and don't be in such a hurry when you're taking out minions and things like that. So I understand the balance. But what I like about his mana trait is every third hit of any kind of hit I'm making, whether it's a special ability or just an auto attack, every third hit gives me mana back. And I'll spend that entire game with all the mana I'd ever need. And
see,
I love that. I freaking love that. It's almost like it's not even a thing I have to. And once in a while I get in a big hairy fight and I spend it all, but I can just go earn it back, even helping someone take down a camp or getting a quick drink, and then I'm back on par again. And that's a great feeling.
So I only do 2 to 3 different builds with him, depending on what the comp is. But what I have found is that universally, whether I, you know, no matter what I'm going in to do, I like the one where every third hit is the heal.
Yeah.
Because he does enough damage without having to pick the damage option that I don't feel like I have to take that if I know I'm going to DPS with him. I feel like being able to stay in the fight because I'm self-healing and healing those around me ultimately does more damage than if I pick a talent that lets me do more damage. And maybe I'm just a bit more conservative on the buttons than you, but I very rarely mana starved with him. I run into it every now and then, but to me, taking that and forgoing that healing to get the mana back to, you know, save the maybe 2 times a match where I'm like, oh, I wish I had more mana right now, isn't enough of a trade-off. So I like the idea of the choice. I don't know if in my play style there's any choice. I always feel like I take the same thing. But
yeah,
That doesn't mean that there isn't someone out there that's like, well, let me tell you about the Karazim build that will just instantly make you a better player. And,
sure,
you
know, and that may be, it may be possible, but what I've found, this is definitely on me, because I'll pick any character. If their first trait or second trait is a mana return trait of some sort, like the first lightning trait for Thrall, I forget what it's called, but it brings back mana every time you use it, I always pick it. Like, I'm always trying to mitigate my mana reserves, and maybe that's a terrible play.
No, I think the whole point of the mana system is to put people on breaks and not make them infinite killing machines. So if you're making a decision to stay in the fight longer, then that's viable. There's countless times where you're playing the game and you're chasing someone down and you're about to get the kill. They have like 10 HP and you're out of mana. You can't blink ahead and do your thing, or it's frustrating. So who's to say that, you know, having a sustained build is incorrect. I think it's just, it's a matter of play style, and that's a choice you make.
Well, we'll see. Go ahead.
Yeah, I would say I've done the build with like that with Jim, and I think it's perfectly fine. Healers are usually the ones that end up staying in the battlefield the longest, because they're less likely to either die or have to run away because they're not fighting as much.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Sustain is good on a healer.
It is. Speaking of healers, check this out.
Come on. We've got lives to save.
All right, that's Lieutenant Morales. She is the medic from StarCraft. The medic. Not all the millions that you made in StarCraft that died. She's the one that lived.
Like Harry Potter.
Like Harry Potter. She's the medic who lived. Instead of having a scar on her head, she has an interchangeable shield logo, depending on what skin you're buying. let's talk about that real quick. I want to circle back around to this maps thing, because I do not want to skip that, but I want to talk about that for sure. Let's talk about her for a second. There's a few things to note. October 6th is the current plan. Is that right?
Yeah. So it's data mined. I just found out today that October 6th looks like it'll be the release date for Lieutenant Morales.
And then you get Artanis a little bit later that month. 27th of October is the current date in the data mined, patch note stuff. And she's getting, they only showed her master skin and her apothecary skin. And they showed the normal skins for Artanis, the purifier skin. And then wasn't there one more he got? Well, I guess.
He has a master
his
skin.
Master
and a master. Yeah.
Finally, by the way, finally a master skin I give three shits about. That is an awesome master skin on him.
Oh, it's really good.
Yeah, he looks great. I'm usually kind of anti-master skin. I don't think any of them are their best work. I think their best work costs money. But man, whew, that thing is.
But the Lieutenant Morales master skin is where you get Samus Morales.
Yeah, nice job on that. Can they do that and get away with that? Can that? I guess so. It's just color, right? It's not like they, you know.
Just colors.
That's true. It's so sneaky, though. And, they're big Nintendo fans over there, so.
I think that color scheme makes it worth it alone. I don't even think I'll play Lieutenant Morales, but I might still save up and buy the skin.
Yeah, it's pretty good. They showed a ton of other stuff, new skins. Marshall Raynor, October 6th, that's coming out. And his old man version of that is probably my favorite. Buccaneer Falstad, which is an absolutely gorgeous pirate theme for Falstad. Amazing. Holy crap. That's on the 27th, so that'll come out when Artanis does.
And the parrot he's riding, one of them has a peg leg.
Oh.
It's got four legs, but one of them is like a peg leg.
That's amazing. Yeah. The third color scheme they showed, the more muted one, it looked so good. They're just killing it over there on that stuff. Showed a ton of new mounts. They got the Void Speeder. This is this floating hoverboard.
Surfboard.
Yeah. So it's like a Protoss surfboard. And the floating monk riding it is my favorite thing in the world, because that's basically two things floating.
I know. How does that work?
It shouldn't work at all.
Chi energy connects to the board, which has hover energy, which connects to the ground.
Dude, it's all
water, yeah. Unless you have power.
It's all some freaky Protoss mumbo jumbo. Who knows how they're pulling that off? But that looks pretty cool. That's estimated to release on the 6th. Also on the 6th, estimated to release is the Vulture mount. This is from StarCraft. This is Jim Raynor's little bike thing.
Finally.
It looks awesome.
I had always kind of wondered why there wasn't a Vulture mount. I mean, it makes sense why Raynor is a guy walking around in the suit in this game. Yeah. But as somebody who, you know, first met Jimmy back when he was riding around on a Vulture all the time.
Yeah.
that's kind of what I've been waiting to see. And so getting that in the game seems really awesome.
So much cooler than that Cybercat, which is cool in its own right. Don't get me wrong, but I've yet to ever play a StarCraft game or read a comic or read a book where Jim Raynor's riding around on a freaking mechanical cat. Has not happened.
Mount up on the Cybercat.
Doesn't make any sense. Unless five of those come together and build a giant robot, I'm not interested in that. But I am interested in the Vulture, and that'll be pretty rad. Looks like a Star Wars kind of vehicle in a couple of the skins, which is exciting. The Nexus Battle Beast, which is a Kodo skin, basically. That
like
is being,
the Nexus Charger.
Yeah. That is being released October 6th, but then they showed the digital rewards for BlizzCon. It looks just like that thing. Is it the same?
I think it is the same. I think they were showing... I think sometimes the information that gets data mined as far as release dates don't always necessarily reflect what the mount actually is going to be. Yeah. I think this is going to be a mount that you can only get as a BlizzCon reward thing.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't have details on whether these are paid for money. Like, we know where the Void Speeder comes from. I guess we know the story on this one too, but we don't know if Raynor's horse is part of a bundle only, or if you can buy it individually. Like,
right.
You can't buy Uther's charger on its own. You have to buy it in the bundle.
I'll bet you money it's a bundle. Outrider horse and Raynor's Outrider sheriff stuff. If that's not a bundle, I'll eat my hat. That's all slated for the 6th as well.
And honestly, looking at the dates, I would say take these dates with a grain of salt, because they like to have things that they can release on weeks that they're not releasing heroes.
Yeah.
And these are all showing as the same date as Lieutenant Morales, so I would not be surprised if they use it to pad out new things between Morales and Artanis.
Yeah, the Thrall skins that came out not long ago, they came out, that was the spacing. It was like, well, here's the new hero. Who was it? I don't remember now. Who's our latest hero?
Rexxar.
Oh, Rexxar, yeah, yeah. So Rexxar came out, and I thought, oh, where's my Thrall stuff? And that came out like a week later, so.
So, well, this is all just data mine information. It's subject to change.
Of course. Headless Horseman, also estimated 27th. That's the WoW mount, which is pretty rad.
So, it looks like there's a, what is it, Hollow's End? That's what the Warcraft spin on Halloween is.
About time to do 27th would be a good day for that.
I wonder if they're going to do themed maps.
Like put little pumpkins all over the place?
Yeah.
So, imagine, all right, so get your tribute, but run past pumpkins that weren't there yesterday.
Yeah.
I feel like the charger might also be an unlock for doing something in WoW maybe or something. Like, I have no idea, but it feels like the kind of mount that might not be a purchase mount.
A purchasable mount. All right. Well, we'll have to wait and see. Anybody buy that judgment set for Uther? Did you guys do that?
No. Yes.
I knew one of you would. How much did that cost? Let's just tell the listeners how far that sent you back.
Talk about it.
It was like $20 or something.
It was in a bundle. It was 20 something. I don't know why, but I got Medic Uther too.
Oh my.
I got in this mode of like, if I'm going to spend money, I might as well spend all the money.
Yeah.
And it's not logical, but that's what I decided to do.
You're supporting the developers in a game that you love. I think that's perfectly logical if you think about it that way.
Yeah. Also, take this for a grain of salt. Gorath is the one saying these words. He owns everything in this game, I think. Pretty close to it.
But I've spent quite a bit. I'm at the $300 mark.
Yeah.
So.
Wow, that is just awesome.
I've only been playing under a year.
If that doesn't tell you you love this game, I don't know what else does. Either that or it tells us that you're a poor manager.
I have poor impulse control and I spend money on everything. I own like all the golden guns in Planetside 2. They're $20 each.
Can't keep your toonies in control over there, or whatever it is you guys. What's your space money? Toonies? What do they call it?
Well, it's toonies. Loonies and toonies for $1 and $2.
Yeah. You know, for an English-speaking nation, you'd think...
What's wrong with loonies and toonies? I mean, think about how much fun it is to call your money like Schmacky Max.
Exactly. I guess penny and quarter and nickel and dime.
Buckaroos.
So boring.
Buckaroos. I would love buckaroos.
We're going to just change it to buckaroos. Yeah. Be very serious. Put all your buckaroos in a bag.
No, I predict the next thing Canada does in its renaming of money is that $5 bills will be called Spocks.
Yeah.
The government is trying to shut down the Spockification of $5 bills. They put out a press release.
Yeah.
And we're not having it, man. The people are going to revolt.
Well, they are revolting. Let's get to some patch notes. I know we're running a little long, but I really do want to hit some of these. So the patch notes for September 24th, Is this? These aren't released yet, though. This is all stuff coming the 6th or
The patch notes were the PTR patch notes were dated September 24th because they were supposed to arrive on the 24th.
Right. I'm PTR, by the way. I didn't say that, but yes, we're talking PTR here.
Yeah, but unfortunately, the PTR build didn't work. So I know I logged in on Friday being like, show me all the new things.
Yeah.
And it was like, sorry, you can't log in. And everyone had the same experience. And then there was a tweet on the Heroes, the official Twitter's, official Heroes Twitter, that it'll be coming Monday. Mm. So we can still talk about all the notes, but can't play it till Monday.
All right. We didn't talk about what Lieutenant Morales has up her sleeve, or up her formidable giant mech sleeves, whatever you want to call those. She has a trait called Caduceus Reactor.
You got it. Oh, man. I was hoping you're going to mispronounce that.
Caduceus.
It's not Caduceus.
No, I don't know.
It's Caduceus.
Audacious. Yeah. Regenerates 3% of your maximum health per second after not taking any damage for 4, or in the video, they referred to it as several. I guess 4 is several.
Yeah.
Healing Beam, which is your Q ability, heals for an ally for 20 health per second as long as they are in range. Reactivate to switch targets or activate your trait to cancel the channeling. It is a channeling heal, single target only.
No cooldown. That's the thing you need to think about, what makes this different.
Yeah, no cooldown at all. And no...
No self-healing.
No self-healing, right. You can't use it on yourself.
Well, based on the language, it says heal an ally. So if you're being very strict about that, it's entirely possible when we get it in our hands, maybe we don't understand.
She doesn't have enough points of articulation to move that arm around and point it at her own head, is my thing.
We also assume it's just heal an ally because of her passive, which is...
But they do show in the video that Safeguard will work on herself, and that also says grant target ally.
Oh, good point. And we did see that. You're right.
Yep.
Okay, we'll have to see. Healing Beam, which is your Q ability, or I already said that. Safeguard, which is your W ability, will grant an ally resistant, reducing damage taken by 25% for 3 seconds. So, again, a nice little buff. Doesn't last very long. Displacement Grenade E, fire grenade that explodes in front of the enemy. It's a straight line thing, doesn't hone. Just get him right in the face. And it deals damage and knocks enemies away. When it explodes, anybody else around gets knocked as well in a radius. So I think that means your own players. So you got to be careful of that thing. I think they're not hurting them, but I think they get the concussion out of it, don't they?
I think it's just enemies.
Is it just enemies? All right. I know that sometimes I can be quick and loose with that kind of stuff. So who knows?
Yeah. Sometimes you never know until you actually play the character is what I have kind of learned with Heroes, is that sometimes it's hard to glean the exact meaning from the description.
Yeah. Cause those guys are like, for several seconds. How long is it really? 8. Okay.
You know, several.
Their first ultimate slash heroic. Are we just going to give up and just call them ultimates forever? Because they really want people to use their own vernacular for this game, and they call them heroics, but we're just going to call them ultimates, aren't we? The player base, I mean.
Yeah, I think we voted on that.
I think
that
that's happening. It's like we're calling them podcasts, not netcasts. Sorry, Leo. Love you, buddy. Stim Drone is the first one you could choose, or one of your options. Grant an allied hero 75% attack speed and 25% movement speed for 10 seconds. That's pretty insane.
Yep, that sounds really great.
Again, single target, no group on that.
But not nearly as fun as the other one.
No, Medivac dropship. So tell me how this appears to work, Gorath, in your opinion. How does this seem to be functioning on the battlefield?
I think you you set a location for the Medivac transport, and you tell everyone to rally up. It's not clear whether you click it or you, for up to 10 seconds before takeoff, allies can right-click to enter the Medivac. So I guess maybe it's a 10-second counter. Everyone's got to hop in, and then you click somewhere else on the map within range, and it takes everybody there.
And when you say within range, is there a minimum, maximum range thing happening?
I have to get in the game and play with it, but I would imagine that this is going to work similarly to The Hunt by Illidan, where Illidan has a really big range on The Hunt, but it's not global. And the level 20 trait, you can make it global. I think probably we'll see something similar with Medivac.
I'm pretty excited.
It seems like it has the potential to do some insane things. Now, one thing to note, Dustin Browder recently did say that during the delay before the Medivac actually takes off, it can be destroyed.
Oh, my. So they can run up. So that 10 seconds, it is vulnerable.
Yeah,
does it destroy the people in it, or does it...
I don't know. That was my next question, was
StarCraft,
what happens.
Yeah. In StarCraft, if you shoot a Medivac, like, everything inside dies.
Yeah, that would seem... Okay, so to me, this seems OP until you just mentioned that. Now I think maybe we're on some equal playing ground.
I think I think you don't die. My actual question in that case would be, what are the ragdoll physics like? So if you blow it up mid-flight, does everyone get sprinkled all across the map?
That'd be amazing.
I mean, I want to see those moments. I mean, we've had them where, you know, we've had the core down to like 1%, but the team died or whatever. Everybody meets back up at your core, assuming it can travel this far, gets in a medevac, and you transport your entire team directly in front of their core to try and take down that last 1%.
Yeah, that would be.
Oh, my God. I figured out why they got rid of 3- and 4-man teams in Hero League. Why
is that?
Well, because you control the one guy by just constantly setting your medevac to the other core.
Conspiracy, a little extra layer of deceit going on here. They just don't want people messing around with that.
I like how I'm the first one to think of that.
That's
like,
pretty good.
How can I troll?
That's pretty good. All right. There's a bunch of other stuff coming up. The Artanis stuff, I think what we'll do, given our timing, is save Artanis for next week. We'll focus on
him. Sounds good. Yeah, this is all just data mine stuff. It could change, so we can wait on it.
We'll focus on that stuff. Instead, what I'm going to do right now is remind people of one quick note. Our theme song and all of its variations were performed, recorded, and sent to me by Bo Schwartz, a.k.a. Gorath over there. So, dude, nice work, man.
Oh, thanks.
Stuff's incredible. I'm going to play one of them now so we can hear your emails. Or you can't hear emails. So we can hear your phone calls and read your emails. 801-471-0462. That's the voicemail line, 801-471-0462. Or email us, core@heroesforyou.com. That's C-O-R-E at heroes for you. That's the word for, not the number for, .com. Let's play this one. This is interesting. It's all about tips for newbies.
Hi, Scott. Jason from Pittsburgh here. I just downloaded the game yesterday, and I'm a total newbie. Really enjoying things so far. At the moment, I'm playing Raynor. But I plan to try out the other free heroes soon. My main question is, what advice would you give to a newbie as far as the mistakes to avoid when you're starting out? And what do you guys wish you'd done differently when you were first starting out? Thanks for your help. Love the show, though.
I wish I would have had more... I hate to say this because I really don't like those other two games. I really had bad times in both League and Dota. But I wish I'd have had more basic MOBA experience so that certain concepts would have come to me sooner. Because when this game clicked for me, it clicked in a huge way and I was never turning back. I freaking love it. But there was a bunch of games ahead of that where I was not exactly sure what I was supposed to be doing. You know, what is Tyrael actually good at? Not knowing how far away you should be when you're playing a ranged character with less hit points. Like, there's just some of the common accepted language of this kind of game was missing from my gaming dictionary. And I just feel like I wish I'd have known more of that stuff. But I don't know how you tell someone that. Sometimes this is going to be their first MOBA/brawler, and they're not going to have any experience that informs this.
Yeah, everyone has their own journey to take.
Yeah. What would you guys say? Do you think there's a particular path for people?
The biggest advice that I would say is if you're going to play a MOBA, it's an online game, you're going to get comments from people about your performance. And so what you just need to do is just go in and lose games.
Yeah.
And just be okay with it. Like, and don't accept.
Not intentionally. I
mean, yeah.
Well, no. Well, you, in a way, you could argue you're intentionally going in, like, you're unskilled. Like, go play Hero League and go be bad at Hero League. Like, I think one of the worst things, advice to give people, is to say, like, don't go into a certain area before you're ready. I'm the kind of player that likes to go to the high level areas and die and explore and push your boundaries. So you need to just not be afraid of that. Just go in and play.
Yeah.
And just go in and be bad and let everyone, you know, you're not supposed to let anyone abuse you. Like, there are tools in the community to help report people, so you shouldn't accept or tolerate that, but don't engage with it. Just go in and practice. It's a journey. Like, you're going to get better by playing, and if you're too afraid to play and if you're too afraid to fail, you just won't do anything.
And Blizzard has made a game that is easy to do what Bo is suggesting, which is get the hell in there. Don't ready, aim, ready, aim, ready, aim. Just get in there and fire!
Yeah,
that's my advice. Yeah. John, what would you say?
I'd actually build off of that for the thing that I wish I had done differently when I was new. As I wish I had bumped up to, Quick Match and in turn Hero League faster. I'm still not all in on Hero League yet, even. I haven't finished my placement matches yet.
Me either.
Because there is an intimidation factor. You know, you get in with AI, and that is what it is. And then there's kind of that first hurdle of, now I have to be with other people for, you know, against AI for cooperative. And then there's the, oh, now it's going to be people versus people. So there's always a new thing, a kind of barrier to push through. And I wish I had pushed through those barriers sooner. I kind of let myself be intimidated away from it for longer than I needed to be.
Which is ironic, because you in games I play with you are often dominant in whatever role you've chosen. You'll pick a specialist and out DPS, out heal, and out XP everybody on the board. So it's not even an issue of how good you think you are. Sometimes it's just an issue of not worrying about what everyone else is doing, I guess. And
yeah,
I agree with that, because you kill it. So the idea that you're more nervous about going in there than some is kind of funny in a way, because you'll just you'll kick their ass.
No matter how good you are, you still, everyone feels bad. Even if you're the top professional, if you go into another game and somebody has their way with you because you're so terrible at this new game,
yeah,
everyone hates that feeling, and we work to avoid it. And if you want to play a game that requires you to improve, then you can't avoid that feeling. You have to embrace that you're going to feel that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to learn to let it kind of roll off your back. I mean, even, and that's very nice of you to say, Scott, but even in matches where I've been doing that, or maybe not played at even my best, you know, you still are going to run into the troll, the person who's going to just yell at you, who maybe they're having a bad game, but rather than accept responsibility for things they're doing, they're going to push it off on the first person they see in there. And, you know, I would say be generous with the mute button. Be willing to report when necessary. Blizzard has, you know, new tools in there to silence people that are being genuinely abusive. That doesn't mean if somebody says, hey, can you come down here and help us? That's not being abusive. Or, hey, don't do that. But I mean, if people are being seriously abusive to you, definitely use report. Use mute if it's bugging you. And
yeah,
especially report to people who turn out to be worse than the people playing bad. Like, yeah. I'll often see that as someone's playing really bad, and I might say, all right, man, why don't you stick with us? I don't think you're doing very well even. And I'll leave it at that, and then someone else will jump in with all the F-bombs and all the, like, you know, uninstall and, you know, comments about their family and what they look like physically. And it's like, whoa.
Yeah, that's a, like, stone through too far. Use that mute liberally. And
now I'm on the side of the guy that doesn't play so good, because I'm like, well, he's a nice guy.
My favorite mute of lately was a game the other day where I got in. And once again, there's always these preconceived notions about characters after they're kind of new for a while. And I chose Jim from Utah, Karazim. And this was a match where it was a ranked match. And I was like, oh, well, there's no other healer. First of all, everyone else has chosen. I'm last. I'm like, well, I'm going to go with the healer I play the best. So I'm going to pick him. And they're all like, oh no, great. Freaking GG everybody, you know, whatever. And we got into this game and I'm like, guys, and I couldn't say anything because we'd already loaded and I was waiting for the load screen. So finally it came in and I was able to chat. And I said, guys, I got this. I will heal you. I'll heal you all day. And we won that game, and not only won it, but I topped healing in the entire match. And my point is, the guy that was the most vocal about that wouldn't shut up about it. So what did I do? I muted him, and it felt great. And he's probably screaming at the stars, but they can't hear him. So I didn't hear him either.
Yeah, the only thing you have to feel bad about that is that you gave him a win.
Yeah, that's it. And that's a pretty good thing to feel bad about. All right, we got one more here about what? Oh, League of Legends players. I wrote down LOL thinking it was meant to be laugh out loud, but I promise I mean nothing by that, okay? So here's that.
I had a question for you guys. I've been playing League of Legends for about 3 years now, really big into League. Been wanting to give Heroes a try, though. Not sure if you had much experience with League. I know, Scott, I think you said you tried it, but hated it. I just wanted to know the big differences between the two and any tips for a new player.
Well, I hated League, and I like this one. Bo, you had a mounts. Lot of League time.
The biggest difference is mounts. I went back to play some League games, and I couldn't stand how long it took me to get back in lane after I died.
Oh, yeah.
It's the worst. Yeah. Oh, my.
It takes a very long time.
It's a lot of traveling. But you played probably more than us in terms of just overall play, and you enjoyed your time in that game. Mounts are a big deal. The fact that it's only ever one map, the item store changes things, last hit changes things, like, There are a lot of things that just aren't there.
Is just like, it's just like the trait system, except it's way more flexible. But it isn't really, because there are builds that you do. Like, you, and that's where it sort of sucks, where you have to go to third party sites, find out what the good builds are for your characters.
Sure.
And then it's just like picking traits, like your build order on items isn't that much different than speccing out in traits. So that's not a huge difference. I think the huge difference is just the game speed. You're going to have to learn to team fight to win at Heroes, where, you know, if you're playing casual matches in League, then you can, I don't know, you can carry your team if you're just good in lane,
yeah,
or you're good at jungling and ganking. Like, there's a different language there. So you have to be on time for all the objectives. That's something you need to work on in Heroes. And you have to be really good at knowing what you're supposed to do in a team fight based on the hero you have selected.
Yeah.
So there's more emphasis on those skills.
Yeah.
Also, do objectives. Because I'll tell you, I played a match a long time ago. I won't out who the player is, but there's a chance he might hear it. And
if it rhymes with Schmerick Land Spy Snock, then I agree.
So, played this match, and this person had played a lot of League of Legends. And it came out as we were getting into the match, they're like, oh no, he's good. He played League of Legends, was really good, very good at that game. Okay, great, got in. And we were all talking at that point on Mumble or whatever it was. And we were on Tomb of the Spider Queen. And I said, hey, man, go turn in. And he says, nah, I don't do the objectives.
What?
And I said...
on Tomb of the Spider Queen?
I said, what? And he says, you don't need objectives. Objectives are dumb. Because he's coming from this League of Legends mentality of all you need is to win fights and lane better and all of that. And he wants to prove this point that, like, his way is so much better. And I said, okay, great. I said, either you go turn those coins in or I'm done healing you. And he said, nope, not doing it. I said, great, enjoy your time in the lane alone.
Yeah.
And I left the lane, and he was left all by himself, and he died 2 seconds later.
And lost
all those coins, and then he said, okay, I will turn the coins in. Please stop shunning me in this game.
Dude, listen, objectives matter. It matters way more than you think, and it's the whole point of the multiple maps. Like, that's the entire point. And you can win a map based on objectives. You can do other strategies to either augment that or sometimes supersede it. But it's still crucial that you and your team do what's appropriate per map on those objectives. And learning those is just a matter of playing the maps and figuring it out. They make
not
it
to say that
easy.
Split pushing isn't a real thing
in
Heroes, because that's definitely a tactic that can be used.
Yeah, but saying I don't do objectives is like me saying, oh, the toilet's full. I don't flush. I just don't flush.
Well, the mistake that this player has made that you're talking about, John, is that there are most definitely objectives in League. Like, and if you watch any of the pro play, they're always talking about which teams are on time for objectives. And in that case, objectives are things like the Dragon and Baron Nashor and the timing on camps and things like that. There are most definitely objectives. They're just not, you know, there's way less fan. There's no fanfare. And Blizzard's all about fanfare with their objectives, which is great.
Completely agree. And
even if you don't like the objectives, like, he's sitting there with like 32 coins. Go turn them in.
Yeah. If you could, because if you die, what a freaking waste that was. Oh, that map. Just, it's all about those coins. It's, or not coins, but gems. Bum gems, I call them, because they're in the bum of the spider.
Spider bums.
Spider bums, yeah. Keep all the spider bums, take them to the spider bum drop off. Everyone's happier.
Eat your spider bombs.
And one day we'll talk John into doing his Spider Queen voice. It's fantastic. Seth wrote in real quick with an email. Says, what is your current favorite hero class and class to play? Thanks, guys, and good luck with the new show. Looking forward to all the great content. Seth, so we've talked a lot back and forth about different characters. It sounds like your favorite hero of all time, John, is still Johanna. Is that still true?
It's tough between Johanna and Sylvanas, but as far as class, I think I have to say Warrior. All my favorite heroes tend to fall in Warrior or Specialist, it seems, tends to be my two camps that I'm in.
Yeah, I'm all Specialist and Assassins as far as my favorites go, but if I'm picking favorites, probably a tie between Tassadar, Jim from Utah, and three-way tie, I'll call it. And I really like Thrall, which is interesting because I usually don't like
Tassadar.
Tassadar is probably my favorite. If you hold a gun in my head and say, Scott, your favorite, tell it now, I'd say Tassadar.
Church of Tassadar.
Yeah, he's just great. And he's so much fun to play. I always feel disappointed with my stats, but I always have fun and I always cause game changer moments with him. And there's nothing quite like what he can pull off late game. It's just scary and awesome. And so I love him and I love his attitude and he's just awesome. But I got to give honorable mention to Thrall, because Thrall was really the character where I really latched onto this game. I like Vala a lot. There's tons of them I like, but Tassadar probably top of my heap. But where do you usually go first?
I like playing anything except support for the most part. Mm-hmm. So if I have to play support, it's Tyrande, who's not really a support.
Right.
At least the way I play her. So yeah. So, I don't really think along those lines. I'm definitely have the highest win rate with this assassins. Yeah. So
you and Jaina, pretty formidable.
Yep, she's my top winning pick for Hero League. You know, it tells you who you win the most with. That's I'm known for my Nova, but love Jaina a little more. Sorry, Nova.
So you're cold hearted is what you're saying. I got it. Because she's cold, you know, she has all the cold stuff.
No, it's funny.
Oh, an ice Jaina's name.
Jaina's the nicest. I would say she's the most warm hearted. It's kind of ironic that she spends so much time in the cold.
Yeah, and the warm hearted guy is kind of a dick. Yeah. Like freaking Kael'thas, he can go jump in a bucket of kale for all I care. I hate that guy.
You know, that would hurt because he'd set the kale on fire.
That's a good point. And it would spread to everyone cheaply at level 16. Anyway, that's going to do it for our first episode. And normally, like I said, we're going to have some really cool crafted stuff to play at the end of shows. Normally, our runtime will be about an hour, 45 minutes of us summing up the week stuff, talking about what's going on, and then a good 15 minutes or so of this sort of crafted, put together pieces, more essay driven pieces about the game and things surrounding it. So I'm very much looking forward to that and to more episodes on this show. Big thanks, everybody, for making this happen. First episode in the can. Way to go, guys.
Woohoo!
Yeah, that's right. We get a woohoo from the crowd. We can't see them. They're listening later. But thank you all for being here. There is information about how to contact us, how to get your voice, your name, your email, your stuff on the show. So stick around for that. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Bo, and for John. We'll see you next week. Be a part of Core? Don't forget, go to frogpants.com/core, join the /frogpants channel in the game, email us core@heroesforyou.com or call us 801-471-0462. Find us on Twitter @CoreHeroes. This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.